his followers of Christ and the Messiah, and have taken him as a god apart from Allah, they will all be saved. Every single one of them, whoever's got a cross on his soldier will be chest will be saved. All these Christians and will be saved. Even the whores of Paris and Chicago, even the gamblers of Las Vegas, and the queers of San Francisco, and the drug addicts of Miami, they all will be raised above the clouds when the nuclear bombs come upon the Muslims. And the only ones who will be destroyed will be the Muslims, the people of Tawheed, the people of worship of Allah. Even if you're at the Kaaba, clinging onto the Kaaba, you will be destroyed when this occurs. And this is the belief of many American presidents. Seven American presidents have held this belief of Armageddon. For instance, we find that Jimmy Carter, in 1979, on March 13th, when he traveled to Israel after the signing of the Camp David Accords, he gave a speech at the Israeli Knesset where he said, seven American presidents have believed and demonstrated that America's relationship with Israel is more than just a special relationship. It has been and it is a unique relationship. And it is a relationship which is indestructible because it is rooted in the consciousness and the morals and the religions and the beliefs of the American people themselves. Israel and the United States were shaped by immigrant pioneers, and we share the heritage of the Bible, meaning the Old Testament in this case. And so these American presidents believe that the battle now in the Middle East is a battle between Goliath and David. And David is the state of Israel, and Goliath are the Arabs. So we are the pagan Philistines, and they are the recipients of the prophets. And that's why we find that President Reagan, the president two presidents ago, on more than 11 occasions stated that he believed that the world was going to come to an end, and that he believed in the coming of the Battle of Armageddon. In fact, it was reported in the New York Times that during a conversation with the director of AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, Reagan said to the director of the Israeli lobby in America, "You know, I turn back to your ancient prophets in the Old Testament and the signs foretelling Armageddon. And I find myself wondering if we're that generation that's going to see that come about. I don't know if you have noticed any of the prophecies lately, but believe me, they certainly describe the times we are going through." Mike Evans, one of the Christian fundamentalist leaders, who was originally a Jew who adopted Christianity, relates that in 1985, Reagan invited him and Jim Baker, who was another Christian fundamentalist who fell into dishonor because he had sexual relations with a woman, something I guess uncommon for Christians, huh? And Jimmy Swaggart, another one of them, and Jerry Falwell. And Mike Evans says, "Myself and a few others met with him in private. And I will never forget what he told us. The president," meaning Reagan, "expressed the belief that America was on the verge of a spiritual awakening. And I believe it with all my heart. God is raising up people like you and me in intercessory prayer and love to prepare the world for the return of the King of Kings and the Lord of Worlds, Lord of Lords," meaning by this, Messiah, because they believe that Jesus is Allah, Fa'adallah and Dalika, Ulwan Kabira. And likewise, George Bush had very close ties with the fundamentalists. And likewise, the current American president, Clinton, his work and his closeness to the Jews, I mean, is so obvious. I mean, how many times have we seen him wearing the Jewish yarmulke on his head and reading Jewish prayers and praying upon their graves as if he was a Jewish rabbi himself? And so therefore, the American presidents and American, as we have seen from the statement of Carter, seven American presidents, he said from Carter's time, and since that time we've had three presidents, Reagan and Bush and Clinton, so it's 10 presidents, have held this belief in these Christian ideals. But what do they hold concerning Islamic fundamentals? And what do they regard us sitting in this room? Do they look at us with such loving eyes as they look at their own fundamentalists or not? Well, we can determine their position from the statements of President Nixon, who, as you know, died a couple of years ago. He wrote a book called 1999, Victory Without War. And this is a title that reeks with these beliefs Because, you know, he said 1999, you know, just the year before the millennium, victory without war. In other words, the age of peace is going to be ushered in. And he talks about the ascendancy of a single world government and what America must do. And he says, Nixon says, and in the Middle East, we see the traditional rivalry of Arab versus Jew evolving into a conflict between Islamic fundamentalists on the one hand and Israel and the moderate Arab states on the other. Now, he wrote this book in the early 1990s, before the Gulf War. What did he say? The Mid-East tradition, was for the Arab against Jews, is now going to become what? Arabs and Jews against Muslim fundamentalists. And this is why I said that the summit of the peacemakers is just an indication of this declaration of war against us. And he also says, in the Muslim world, from Morocco to Indonesia, Islamic fundamentalism has replaced communism as the principal instrument of violent change. And he also says, telling America to return back to its Christian roots, giving words that only the most arrogant and haughty fundamentalists would say, he says that when America was weak and poor 200 years ago, we were sustained by our faith. In other words, when America was formed in 1776, America was sustained by their faith when they were weak and poor. And then he says, as we enter into our third century and the next millennium, we must rediscover and reinvigorate our faith. And likewise, Nixon also said, at the conclusion of the first famous Reagan-Gorbachev summit, which I talked about in Malta, Foreign Affairs magazine quoted Nixon as saying that the United States and Russia must unite together to fight Islamic fundamentalism, which has, I mean, occurred as we saw in Bosnia and now in Chechnya. Okay, so therefore, this idea of returning the Jews back to Palestine first began with the Christians. The idea of Zionism first began with the Christians. Should we stop now this time? Give a break to the brothers? Or? Okay, 10 minutes are giving me, so don't. I won't be long, inshallah. So, this idea first started with the Christians. And that, unlike what we most of us think who studied history, modern history, think that the first call to Zionism began with Theodor Herzl, in Switzerland in the 1800s, but it really began 4 centuries before that amongst the Christians. And if we do not understand this, we will not be able to understand why the West supports the Jews in this conflict. How were the Jews formerly treated in Europe? For those of you who have studied history, know that the Jews are cursed in the New Testament. The Jews are cursed. Indeed, we know from the Quran that Allah cursed the Jews from before the time of Jesus, alayhi salam. Because Allah tells us in the Quran, in Surah 5, verse 78, Surah Al-Ma'idah, that cursed were the unbelievers of the children of Israel by the tongue of David and Jesus, son of Mary. That for the rebelling and their transgression. The Jews are accursed, that they were, that the Christians realizing this, that they are murderers and bloodsuckers, was not the reason for Christian enmity. But the Christian enmity towards the Jews is because the Christians believe that the Jewish crime is that they killed the Lord Jesus. تَعَالَ اللَّهُ عَنْ ذَلِكَ عُلُوًا كَبِيرًا. The Christians believe that the Jews killed God. And so therefore an enmity occurred between them from those days. But as Allah spoke truthfully when He told us in Surah An-Nisa, that they neither slayed Him nor crucified Him, meaning Jesus. And as a result of this, the Roman Catholic Church, who is located in Rome as you know, has continued to curse and show enmity to the Jews in an amazing way. One of the oddities of this enmity and this animosity was that in the Middle Ages, when a dangerous plague spread in Europe, which was known as the Black Death, and killed millions of people, laid whole cities to waste, the Pope declared, but at least certain Christians declared that the cause of this disease was the Jews. So they used to put the Jews to the sword. It is as if any and all filth and evil in the world is to be laid at the doorstep of the Jews. And as a result, the Jews faced much persecution in Europe and faced violent cleansing. Ethnic cleansing began with the Jews in Europe. It occurred in the 13th and 14th and 15th centuries in Britain, in Germany, in France, and other European countries and cities. Jews were cast out, were killed, were expelled in order to cleanse the societies from the evil of the Jew. And that's because the Europeans, the Christians, saw them as the most dangerous and most evil of Allah's creatures. And it was from this hell of Europe that the Jews fled to where? To the sanctuary of Al-Andalus, of Islamic Spain, where they were sheltered by the Muslims. And when the Christians overtook Al-Andalus and removed the last Muslim stronghold or foothold in Andalus, which was in Granada in 1492, the Christians then began to expel the Muslims and the Jews from Al-Andalus. And what became as the Inquisition occurred. And so the Jews were forced to flee with the Muslims, and the Jews fled to the Muslim lands, especially the Turkish areas under Turkish control, like Greece and the Balkans and so forth, and Cyprus and these lands. And it was during this historical period, when the Muslims were taken out of Al-Andalus, that Allah decreed that two significant events occur. Two significant events which we live its aftermath until today, even though it's 500 years has passed. The first event was the discovery of America by the Europeans, a historical geographical event. And the second event was the emergence of the Protestant movement in Christianity, in the split of the church. And with that, let me stop to give the brothers a chance to take a break, because I think they're tired, huh? Because it's 10 minutes or something like that, huh? A break. And we'll pick up from there and continue in about 10 minutes. Jazakumullah khair. Alhamdulillah. Wassalatu wassalamu ala rasulillah wa ba'd. All right, we're continuing our discussion now of the historical events that have led to the current Middle East situation. And we mentioned that it was in the year 1492, or in that period of the 15th and 16th centuries, that two major events occurred that Allah decreed, one of which geographical, the other religious. And it is the confluence of these two events that has resulted in the creation, or the resulting from that, the greatest power inimical to Islam in the world today, the United States of America. These two events were the European discovery of America, a historical geographical event, and the second issue was the start of the Protestant movement. You brothers probably know that Protestantism, or is that Christian sect, who objected to and revolted against the authority of the Pope of Rome, the Catholic Church. In general, in summary, they believe that no human being can stand intermediary between them and Jesus. And they argued that biblical interpretation and biblical reading should be for every single individual to do. In other words, before that, the priests were the only ones who would have copies of the Bible, and they would read and interpret it to the laity or to the common folk. However, they believed that every Christian should himself be able to read his Bible and interpret it and so forth. And they also believed in a literalism of the Bible. And unlike the Catholics, they believed whatever is mentioned in the Bible should be taken literally and not be given figurative or allegorical interpretation. Now, in these ideas, they were influenced by the Muslims. So much so that Martin Luther was accused himself of being a closet Muslim. And that is because the Christians, when they came to the Muslim lands during the Crusades that occurred before this by two centuries or three centuries, they came into contact with Muslim civilization and Muslims. And they saw that the Muslims had no priestly hierarchy or class, that Muslims had no intermediaries between them and Allah, that Muslims, every Muslim would read the Quran himself, and that Muslims believed in what the Quran said literally, without figuratively interpreting it. And so therefore these ideas were embedded in the psyche of the European when he returned back after the Crusades. And therefore a religious movement, a revolt occurred in Europe, led by Martin Luther. One of Martin Luther's things that occurred with him is that they translated for the first time the Bible out of Latin into what is known as the vernacular, or the languages spoke by the European people. And what was translated was the Old Testament into German and into English. And as a result, Protestantism was spread predominantly in Northern Europe. in Germany and in the United Kingdom, what we call now the UK or England in those days. And what had occurred was the people started to have, it became a religious movement, okay, that was rooted in the Old Testament, which they would now were reading in their vernacular, in their common tongue. Instead of reading it in Latin, they would now read it in English or in German or in whatever. And as a result, when they read this, they saw these prophecies saying that the children of Israel were going to be blessed in the seed of Abraham. And they also felt that because the Messiah had to return among the children of Israel, they thought that in order to bring back the Messiah, they had to bring the Jew into the Holy Land. And so therefore, Christian-Jewish relations changed for the first time in history. Rather than Christians putting the Jews to the sword, as they did in the Catholics, the Christians started to support the Jews. And as a result, it is considered that, for instance, Napoleon, when he attacked the Islamic world and conquered Egypt in 1798, one of his main aims, besides conquering Egypt and so forth in order to, but one of his main aims was to take Palestine in order to give it to the Jews. And likewise, one of his aims was, of course, most of you might not know, that he attempted to go to Medina to take the Prophet's body out of his grave and put it in the Louvre Museum in Paris. So, you know, Napoleon was, one of his aims was to let the Jews come into Palestine. And so therefore, Christian-Jewish relations started to improve slowly and slowly. And the Jews, seeing this, decided to take advantage of this. And so they started to support Protestantism. Because the Jews, when they were under Catholic rule, were forced to live in ghettos, they were put to the sword, they were persecuted. But now the Christians are coming, a Christian sect says that, look, we need to be kind to the Jews, and we need to take care of them and move them to Palestine so the Messiah can come back. And also the enmity that occurred between the Christians fighting themselves, the Jews found in this a respite. Because now the Christian was putting sword against Christian, instead of putting the sword against the Jew. And so therefore the Jews started to support the Protestant movement with all their money and their machinations, their plotting. And many Jews entered into this movement and helped it spread. And slowly these ideas spread from Protestantism until it reached the other Christian sects. And as a result, Europe in the centuries following the fall of Muslim Spain in the 16th and 17th centuries witnessed a sectarian strife of killing between Protestant and Catholic, which the vestiges of this war is still witnessed in the end of Europe, in the border, the final outer extreme of Europe, where in Ireland. You see? I mean, this battle of Catholic against Protestant in the heart of Europe came to an end, right? But the vestiges of this battle is still at the periphery of Europe, in Northern Ireland. So as a result, the Protestants, being slaughtered by the Catholics, were forced to flee. And where did they decide to flee to? The New World. And they came to the New World with a religious belief rooted in the Old Testament. And that's why the first Americans, Europeans, to come to the United States were known as who?
Pilgrims.
The Pilgrims. What was the other name for them? They're called the, because of the P also. Huh? Protestants, they're Protestants, I know. Puritans. Right? The Puritans, the strong Christians, you know? And if you see any of those movies or documentaries or something like this, they came in there. Massachusetts, right? Most liberal state now in the United States, 400 years ago, was the most severely religious state in the United States. Most severely religious area where they applied the law of Moses and so forth. So this new religious thing, and they thought, the Christians, the Protestants, when they came from England and from Germany into North America, they thought that their coming to North America was like the children of Israel leaving the persecution of Moses and going to the Holy Land. So when they came to America, to this wilderness, they started to name the cities of America that they lived and they formed according to the names of biblical cities. And that's why, for instance, myself and Brother Adrien, we live maybe about 20 or 30 miles from Damascus. Not Damascus, Syria, but Damascus, Maryland. And so forth, throughout the United States, you find, you know, cities and places mentioned which are taken from biblical names, because this is what they did when they were forming these cities. And they thought of themselves like the children of Israel. In fact, it was even considered when they formed the United States of America, when they were debating, when they revolted against the British crown, and they thought, what should we call this country? And before they decided to settle in the United States of America, an idea was put forward to call it New Israel. See, it's a reflection of this biblical belief. And thus, America was established, as Carter said in the speech that I quoted, or that part, excerpt of the speech, upon this Protestant biblical foundation, Old Testament foundation. And now you can understand why, if you understand this, how America is rooted in the Old Testament. How come America, with all its might and its wealth, stands in to support the Jews now in Israel, and stands prepared to receive the Antichrist, or the Messiah who they expect will appear in the year 2000. And as a result of this, throughout American history, you find people calling to Jews gathering in Israel, in Palestine. Among these was a person named William Eugene Blackstone, who was born in the year 1841, I mean almost 107 years before the foundation of the State of Israel. And he wasn't a Jew, but he was a Methodist Christian, and he wrote a book called Jesus is Coming. Jesus is Coming. This book was translated into 48 languages, including Hebrew, and sold over 1 million copies. In fact, in the last century, it was the most widely read book in the West, after, like, the Bible. And in this book, his idea, if we were to summarize, this is about 100 pages, that we must gather all the children of Israel to, all the Jews, to the children of, to Palestine, to prepare for the Messiah, because he was born in 1841, and he thought in the year 1900, Jesus was going to come. So we have to prepare for this. And likewise, what he did was, he got a petition together, where it was signed by 413 prominent Americans, congressmen, judges, lawyers, and so forth, and they were presented it to Benjamin Harrison, who was the president at that time, petitioning him to use his good offices and influence, what they said, to achieve Jewish claims to Palestine. And this was given to Benjamin Harrison in the year 1891. Okay. At this time in England, the other Protestant, you know, bastion, we found that during Victorian rule, Queen Victoria's rule, the British established something called the Palestine Exploration Fund. And this Palestine Exploration Fund, or the PEF in short, the patron of it was the Archbishop of Canterbury, who, as you all know, is the leading bishop of Protestant British tradition. And the purpose of this fund was to discover the Promised Land and its boundaries and landmarks in the Torah. And then we find, at the turn of the century, we come to the next great, or next individual, prominent individual, is Balfour, who his niece, in his bibliography, or in his biography, mentioned that he had a faith deeply rooted in the Torah, and that he would read the Bible on a daily basis and believed in it literally. And it was a result of this faith of his that he composed the Balfour Declaration, allowing the Jews, or giving them a right to live in, establish a homeland in Palestine. And at the same time, during Balfour's time, you had the Prime Minister of England at the turn of the century was Lloyd George, who calls himself a self-confessed Zionist. Here he's calling himself a Zionist. And he proclaimed his belief that it was necessary for the Jews to gather into Palestine in order for the Messiah to come back. And that's why at the beginning of the century, the British were the ones who were assisting the Jews to gather into Palestine. It was the British who took Palestine, and it was the British who declared the Balfour Declaration, and it was the British who set up the Jews in Palestine. And there are other evidences, which are too many to quote at this time. A book which was written by a lady called Regina Sharif and was printed here in the United Kingdom in London. It's called Non-Jewish Zionism. She covers four centuries, showing through the poetry and the writings, the intellectual writings of Christian Europe, supporting the idea, and Regina Sharif is not a Muslim, I mean her name, she's a Christian, I think a Palestinian Christian, supporting that how the Christians believed it was necessary for the Jews to be in Palestine in order for the Messiah to come, and they were working on this from the 14th and 15th and 16th century until they finally were able to achieve it in this century. Indeed, Chaim Weizmann, the first Jewish prime minister, said that from the main reasons the Jews were able to win the Balfour Declaration from England to establish a national Jewish homeland was the influence of the Torah on British sentiment, on the common Britisher. And at this time, we find also in America, when the British were doing this, the American president was Woodrow Wilson, who we talked about earlier. We mentioned him earlier. When Wilson had the opportunity, came to the League of Nations to establish a homeland for the Jews in Israel, he said, and I quote, "To think that I, the son of the manse," meaning the manse is the church, "the son of the church, should be able to restore the Holy Land to its people." He saw this was a divine mission for him, that he was able to restore the Holy Land to its people, meaning the Jews. And he was a Presbyterian, and the manse, the word manse, is a Presbyterian term used for the church. And about Wilson, Regina Sharif mentions that it was his commitment to Zionism was very deep, and this was due to his Christian Zionist ideology, to the degree that he was so blinded by his Christian fanatical beliefs to the moral, political, and religious consequences of allowing the Jews to be in Palestine. In fact, among the ludicrous oddities is that President Wilson, when asked one time at the White House how many Jews he thought were in the world, he said 100 million Jews. And he said it's a shame that there's 100 million people wouldn't have their own country. Even though the Jews at that time, their numbers didn't surpass 10 million. But you see how the Jews were able to indoctrinate them. Because the message in the Bible says that their numbers will be as the dust of the earth. So here you have the president of the most educated nation of the world thinking there are 100 million Jews in the world who don't have a country when their numbers weren't even more than 10 million. Also during this time, right after World War I, you had the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the United States Congress, an individual by the name of Henry Cabot Lodge, who in 1922, during a speech in Boston, he made the following remark. In 1922, he says, "It seems to me that it's entirely becoming," it means it's very good, "and commendable that the Jewish people in all portions of the world should desire to have a national home for such members of their race as wish to return to the country which was the cradle of their race and where they lived and labored for several thousand years." In other words, he's saying it's very good to see that the Jews have their national home, which they were for 1,000 years before. Then he says this, and this is the important point. "I never should accept in patience the thought that Jerusalem and Palestine should be under the control of the Mohammedans," meaning the Muslims. 16 years before the creation of Israel, Henry Cabot Lodge, the head of the Foreign Relations Committee of the United States Congress, said, "I cannot accept the idea that Jerusalem and Palestine is going to remain in the control of the Muslims." Because, you know, after World War I, right, when he's speaking after World War I, 6 years or 4 years after World War I, Palestine was taken from the control of the Ottoman Muslims, right, and put under British control, mandate. So he's saying, but I cannot see it ever. I cannot have myself stand to bear to see it, that Palestine returns back to the Muslims and Jerusalem in particular. This is to show us that the Christians believed before the Jews that the Jews should be in Palestine. In fact, when Theodor Herzl first came up with the idea that the Jews should go to Palestine, most of the Jews in the world rejected the idea. Because many Jews believe, and you will find many Orthodox Jewish rabbis in America and elsewhere, believe that this is an indication of their end. That they know that from their scriptures, that once the Jews all gather in Palestine, the Messiah will come and they'll be slaughtered and they will come to their end. So for this reason, some Orthodox Jews do not want to see the state of Israel, and they are against it, because they see this as an indication of that their end has come close. And one of the results of this Protestant religion was, just like they had a revival when it first started 500 years ago and they went to America and so forth, that now it's experiencing a Christian revival. It is a revival. And it's a fundamentalism. And it's a fundamentalism which is rooted in the Bible. We know that, for instance, it is said, according to statistics like the Gallup poll, the Gallup Institute says that America, after Ireland, is the most religiously Christian nation. Indeed, 94% of all Americans are said to believe in God, according to their doctrines. And 71% of all Americans believe in life after death. In 1970, 131 million Americans were church members. In 1980, it was 135. But however, by 1982, it became 139.6 million. So you can see in 2 years, while from 70 to 80, church increased 4 million people. And of course, the American population increased. That's probably a natural increase. But however, in the 2 years that followed, It jumped 4 million. And for instance, we know that in 1982, Americans donated $60 billion, $60 billion to the church. Most Muslim countries don't have $60 billion as their gross national product. Saudi Arabia is probably one of the richest Muslim countries, if not the richest Muslim country. Their gross national product is not more than $45 or $50 billion. That's a whole nation. But yet Christians in America donated to their churches $60 billion in 1982. What is that money compared to the national wealth of the poorer Muslim countries like Chad, Niger, Bangladesh, and so forth? One might imagine. In fact, and as a result, we find the Christian missionaries that in 1989, total Christian contribution for missionary activity alone was $151 billion. And this is reported by the International Bulletin of Missionary Research. And at the end of my trip here in the United Kingdom, there's going to be a lecture, myself and Brother Adrit, regarding Christian activities to make the Muslims, evangelical, evangelization of the Islamic world, I think is what he titled it. How many schools do you find, Christian schools in the United States? In 1981 and 1982, it is reported that there were 1,948 higher studies institutions for Christian studies. In 1954, there were only 123 Christian schools, day schools, in the United States. By 1980, it was more than 18,000. Think of that. In 1954, 123 Christian day schools. By 1980, it occurred how much? More than 18,000 in the United States. This is all indications of a religious revival in America, a Christian fundamentalism. Also, for instance, we know that the famous universities in the United States were all founded upon Christian fundamentalists or Christian Protestant bases like Harvard, Yale, and other universities. Today, Christian fundamentalists have more than 20,000 schools where millions of students study. However, the Islamic University of Medina, probably one of the few Islamic institutions we have in the Islamic world, has no more than 1,000 or 2,000 students in the student body. In all of Saudi Arabia, there's only maybe three or four Islamic universities. I would imagine that in the whole Islamic world, in fact, I think I read one time that in the whole Islamic world, the total amount of Islamic universities we have in the Islamic world is no more than 100 universities. And yet, in the United States, they have more than 20,000 schools of different levels where millions of students study. Also, we know that the presidents of the United States, one of the indications of their religious revival is that the presidents of the United States, we find them have a very deep religious belief. Jimmy Carter, until today, is a traveling missionary. Today you find him in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Tomorrow you find him in Sudan and Ethiopia and Somalia. The next day he's in Bosnia, going all over the world, spreading Christian ideas and spreading the political agenda of the United States of America. Likewise, Ronald Reagan, as we said, who came after Carter, mentioned that in more than 11 occasions he believed in the biblical prophecies and Armageddon. Publicly, 11 occasions he declared that. Bush was an ally of the fundamentalists, even though he himself might have not held those ideas, but did it out of hypocrisy. And likewise, we know that Clinton is a very strong Christian and has his Christian facade to him. In 1984, the amount of religious books that were sold in the United States were more than one-third of the total gross sales of the entire commercial book market. In other words, more than one-third of all the books sold in the United States were religious books in 1984. And it's estimated the value of these books were equal to $1 billion, which were bought by 37 million buyers. I don't think now you can find in any Islamic world 37 million buyers for Islamic books to that degree. Also, we know, for instance, in the United States, what they call the electric church, or the evangelical preachers of the likes of, in the past, like Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Baker, and today you find Jerry Falwell and others. It is said that 47% of all Americans tune in at least once a week to watch fundamentalist programs in 1918. One new religious radio station is being established every week in America, and one new religious television station every month. And this statistic was taken in 1978. What must it be now, close to 1998, 20 years later? And in fact, we know that, for instance, one of the organizations which are doing the missionary work in the Islamic world, reach now more than 60 countries of the world through satellite broadcasts, where millions and millions of people, you know, hundreds of millions of people watch their programs. The Association of National Religious Broadcasters, when they were founded in 1944 in the United States, they only had 49 stations. But by 1980, it was 800 stations, which produced 1,000 different religious programming they had, 1,000 religious stations they had. It is said that the two major Christian fundamentalist stars, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, take in every year more money than the Republican and Democratic parties combined, the two major political parties. So you might imagine two church leaders, two fundamentalist leaders in the United States, bring in more money into their churches than the two major political parties in the United States, the Democrats and the Republicans. Which is similar to, I guess, Labour and what? Likud, what's in English? Labour and Conservative or Tory or whatever. And so therefore, this American fundamentalist movement is considered one of the major political phenomena of the 20th century. And it is said now that the followers of American fundamentalism in the United States reach between 40 to 80 million people. And for those of us in the United States, like myself and Brother Idris, we saw that in the last congressional elections in 1995, how the Christians fundamentalist coalition were able to sweep Congress and put a conservative leadership in Congress for the first time in 40 years. And how they're opposed now to, they have a great influence now in the agenda for the next coming presidential elections. In fact, one sociologist studying from the United Kingdom, studying the phenomena of American fundamentalists, says that given their following and their money and their growth, that this trend of thought should last for at least 500 more years. Because of the power, I mean, we saw the communists, right? Communists, how long did they last? They lasted about, 100 years and it just came to an end. But this British sociologist, saying given the way American fundamentalism is growing and the power they have and the wealth, that as an idea, as a religion, as a sect, it should last for at least 500 more years. You might imagine what type of power we're talking about. Okay, let us see. So, and one of the reasons for the spread of American fundamentalism is the appearance of AIDS. You know, America was a very sexually loose society after the 60s and in the 70s. And Americans occurred what was known as the sexual revolution. And it was passé to jump into bed with one partner and then the other, and then jump the next moment with another partner or whatever sort of sexual perversion they engaged into. However, though, with the appearance of AIDS, this was one of the major causes, this disease that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala plague Allah struck them with, one of the major causes for the return to the people. Because what had happened was the people saw this as a sign. And people started to then question their moral decay. And as Nixon said, it's important that they have to reinvigorate and rediscover their faith. And so one of the major reasons for the return of American fundamentalism in the last 15 and 20 years is the decay of American society and the loss of the mores of the society through the sexual revolution and elsewhere and other things. What is interesting to know is that concerning the American fundamentalist movement is that the Organization of Islamic Broadcasting in Jeddah, this is an organization, did a study concerning evangelical broadcasting in the Islamic world. And they found in their study that there are 38 television stations, 66 cable networks, 1,400 radio stations. Among these are four television services with the annual budget of each one of them exceeding $50 million just to make da'wah, Christian da'wah to the Muslims. It is estimated that in 1985, half of all Christians used satellite, Christian broadcasting. This means that they are able to reach all corners of the earth. In fact, regarding cinema, the Christians have prepared $100 million to prepare movies which they called under the title the Genesis Project. And the idea was to produce 15 films taken from Genesis and 18 films taken from the Gospel of Luke. And in these programs, one of the things which they produced was called, it's called the Jesus movie. What was it called? Jesus? No, that's called, it's called the Jesus movie or something like that. And this movie has been shown in about 20 Islamic countries. And they've translated it into over 50 languages. This is about the life, the seerah of Jesus, alayhi salam, but from a Christian perspective. And they have distributed over 100 million video tapes of this in the Islamic world. They broadcast it publicly in Egypt, in Pakistan, in Iraq, on government television, and elsewhere in the Islamic world. In the new Central Asian countries of Kazakhstan and so forth, one of their first aims is to put this movie, the Jesus movie, on public television in order to influence the minds of the Muslims. What do these programs state? We can take an example from something said by Jimmy Swaggart, where he said in one of his programs, "I feel that America is tied with the spiritual umbilical cord to Israel. These ties go back long before the founding of the United States of America. The Judeo-Christian concept goes all the way back to Abraham and God's promise to Abraham, which I believe also included America. Because God still says, I will bless those that bless Israel, and I will curse those that curse Israel." Of course, the Bible says, "I will bless those that bless Abraham." But he's saying to the people, "I will bless those that bless Israel." You see how they interpret it for their own beliefs. And thank God, the United States of America still stands supreme today. And I firmly believe that this is because we stood behind Israel, and I pray God we always will stand behind Israel. The meaning of his words is that America's blessings and America's strength comes because it stands behind Israel. So once America leaves Israel, it means America will collapse. This is what they believe. And this is why you find that the Christians, stars of Christian fundamentalism, are very supportive of Israel. For instance, Jerry Falwell, the head of an organization which was called the Moral Majority, which he disbanded a few years ago, he has said that America is a Judeo-Christian republic. And he has said that to stand against Israel is to stand against God. And he talks always in his programs about God's promise to Abraham 4,000 years ago, that I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curses thee. And he says from a theological perspective, America should be without hesitation giving total financial and military support to the state of Israel. He also thought that when Israel was established in 1948, this was the key to the prophecies of the Torah and a sign of God's faithfulness and blessing to his chosen people. He also has a university called Liberty University, where he says by the year 2000 he will have 50,000 students studying from numbers of countries around the world the divinities from a Jewish perspective. And he has said that Genesis indicates the boundaries of Israel will stretch from the river Euphrates on the east to west of the Nile River. The promised land would encompass portions of present-day Iraq, Syria, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Sudan, all of Lebanon, Jordan, and Kuwait. This is what he says. This is all belongs to the Jews, all these lands. Likewise, he attacks the Arabs, and he says that the Arabs are an accursed race because they are from the people of Canaan, and he says there's no room for the Arab in America. And also we find Pat Robertson, who has tried to become, on occasion, once or twice, has tried to reach for the Republican nomination as President of the United States. He has his Christian broadcast network, which broadcasts 24 hours during the day, and among his programs is the 700 Club. And he has also said, the rebirth of Israel is the only indication that the final countdown for the world has begun. And he calls the Arabs God's enemies. And he says God will establish, he said there's no room for justice with the Palestinians so long as it's God's will to establish Israel and demarcate its borders. One of the things he's done is that he has opened up a station which is known as the Middle East Broadcasting Station now. It previously used to be called Star of Hope. And when it first opened up, he said this statement. He said, because it broadcasts to the Muslim land, it broadcasts to Syria, Iraq, Turkey, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. And in which Pat Robertson said, and in the first broadcast day, the Quran and Muslim teachings do not meet the deepest needs of the human heart. These are times of crises, and Islam stands on the divided doctrine, meaning that Islam, he expects, will fall and collapse. Robertson goes on to say, while there are deeply ingrained prejudices, there is a new openness to the gospel message, if only if it could be available by television. And to show his power, that in 1985, he assisted, it was when the Americans took the Jews out of Ethiopia, the Falasta Jews, they did it on Pat Robertson's airplane. And Pat Robertson, with the CIA, assisted the Jews, and this was widely reported in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and elsewhere, to assist them. The Americans did it, and Bush took Robertson along. He was at that time a vice president, and they went along to do it. Likewise, we have a person named George Otis, which we will talk about in our evangelical lecture. At one time, he ran an organization called High Adventure Ministry, and now he runs an organization called the Sentinel Group. And he has said that he believes literally that the gospel, the Bible, is the word of God, and that Israel is the precursor for the second coming of the Messiah, and that he says in one of his advertisements, "We are limited to the security of Israel. We believe that all of the Holy Land is an inalienable possession of the Jewish people. And we believe that the establishment of modern Israel is an undeniable fulfillment of biblical prophecy, the herald of the coming coming Messiah." Likewise, we had a person in the United States who in the 80s called Mike Evans. He's a Jew who became a Christian. And he ran an hour-long special called Israel, America's Key to Survival. In other words, America will not survive unless it supports Israel. And he also came about with a proclamation of support where he called the American people to come to the support of America's best friend by signing a proclamation of blessing to Israel, for Israel, because God distinctly told him to produce this television special. In other words, this television special that he had is wahi from Allah to him. This wahi that he received from Allah, that he says, was aired on 50 stations and was seen by tens of millions of Americans, Europeans, and even Latin Americans. In his proclamation, he had over 1 million people sign it, and it was then given to the American president and to the Israeli prime minister. Another group in the United States, a very dangerous group, is called the International Christian Embassy. This is probably considered the most dangerous group, one of the most dangerous groups in the world. Basically, they say that God has required them to establish an embassy for the